One long-running indie rock band is looking forwards and back at the same time. The Athens-based group 5/8 has been around since the late 1980s, and they're getting ready to release a new album. They're also the subject of a documentary called Weirdo, the story of 5/8, named for the ill-fated record the band put out in 1994. The band's lead singer, Mike Mantione, and the documentarian Mark Pilvinsky spoke with producer Mike Johns about the ups and downs of rock and roll.
So the new 5/8 album that's coming out is called Songs for St. Jude. Can you tell me about that title?
St. Jude is the patron saint for lost causes. And so we being, you know, I think it's kind of, you know, just a what we decided for ourselves as a good description of us, as well as, you know, a lot of the folks who we're singing about.
I think of you often as a presence. With your papers in your bones.
I think it was in also kind of like a contrast to the last record, which is Your God Is Dead to Me Now. So it was kind of like, you know, kind of looking at that and saying, well, maybe there's something more we're going to visit here.
Yeah, the profane than the sacred.
Right.
Yeah. Now, Songs for St. Jude doesn't sound like an album that's coming from a band that's going into its third decade together. it's still really aggressive and abrasive, and it has this energy to it that, like, could be coming from a band half your age. Now, 5/8's known for having, you know, really energetic live shows. How do you put that on a record?
To put an energetic live show onto a record, you have to somehow create a way to have the audience in your, you know, in your heart when you're performing it. So you've got to have the audience that you're reacting to. You've got to have the guy who you love to sing to in this control room with you, you know. So I sweat that a lot. The way this record was recorded was evenings after work, you know, from about 9 o'clock at night till about 3:30 in the morning over a period of 2 years. So, you know, it's like blips here and there. And when the magic happens, it was great. The studio was literally 15 minutes from my house. So I could just jump in the car and drive over there and get recording.
Yeah. Mark, you're making the documentary Weirdo Reborn. It's about the band sort of reclaiming that 1994 album of theirs. Can you talk about what it was about the remixing of that record that said this might be a good story to tell?
Yeah, I think it's just, it's one of those records that it came out and just blew everyone I knew away. But it's not one that I think made as big a splash as it should have. It's one of those things worth revisiting, you know. It's like the culture missed that album, and nobody should have. It's a great, great record.
Yeah, Mike, can you talk a little bit about like the struggles around making that record?
Well, we were on the road like 250 dates a year. I was, my daughter had just been born when we went into the studio. She was about 3 months old, and David Barbie, who was the producer, had a brand new daughter, and we went into the studio immediately. We had only 2 weeks to record the record, basically 10 days. In those days, you got everything happening in those 10 days, or that was it. And we got into the studio, and Patrick immediately had like 104 fever. So by the time he's done doing his tracks, he's ready to just be shipped off. And we got rid of him, and we couldn't bring him back. There was some stuff that we needed to redo, and we just couldn't redo it. That was the way, that was it.
So it was, I mean, it's sort like the recording of it was kind of a fiasco, and then the record label kind of stepped in.
Yeah, once the actual record was made, which was trouble enough as it was, then the record label started doing things that I really wasn't even aware of at the time. They just kind of went off a cliff following this ridiculous idea that a label president had to make the record sound better on his stereo, whatever that was, and they took a degenerated DAT tape and then used that as the master of the record.
Oh my God.
And then mastered that, and then we had no idea. I remember listening to it with Warren, our manager at the time. You know, it was an old cruddy van, and we were driving around town going, and he was like, "What do you think, Mike? What do you think?" And I'm like, I don't care anymore. Can we just put the record out? Do what makes them happy. I was like, we just need to have this happen.
Yeah.
Well, it was an emotional scar for the band, and Patrick was like, "I think we need to fix this." And we did. Having all four of us in the studio at the same time with David Barbie, listening to the mixes getting cleaned up and returned to their original state, was probably one of the most moving experiences I've ever had in a recording studio. Just sitting there and listening to it and going, wow, you know, we were kids, and this meant so much to us at the time, and it even, in a way, means more to me now than it did then. So it was pretty... It's pretty poignant for the band, and just a great way to fix something you usually don't get a chance to repair, you know.
Yeah, you went into this not really expecting to make an entire documentary. Can you talk about like that, how that idea grew?
Sure. I was a journalist in Athens in the early '90s. We reconnected in August of 2015. And I didn't really know it, but Weirdo was about to be re-released 5 weeks later, and so we talked about doing a music video for Behead Myself, which is, I think, one of their all-time great songs. But the idea of doing some little promo video, talking about this Weirdo re-release came up, and we were able to put together this little, like, 18-minute long documentary about that one album. And I think, like, the interviews are, like, super confessional, and there's certainly a lot of drama to be wrought from this story.
I think that expectation is part of what set up the whole failure to recognize what they had that the label eventually had, that they thought this was going to be this big, shiny, huge rock record. And we made this fairly personal, quirky, intimate indie record.
And there's like so much more story to this band. So that's why we're making a feature documentary about them now.
Yeah. And that's still a work in progress. You expect to, do you have an expected, completion date?
Yeah, I think we hope to start submitting it to festivals in the fall. I think the public will probably see it like in early 2018.
Awesome.
Yeah.
One of the confessional aspects of that, of the documentary, the short that's already online, Mike, you've been really public about your nervous breakdown that you
right.
had. Yeah. Which led to this outpouring of songs. It became early 5/8 songs. That's a really intense origin story.
Right.
It's something I'm sure, you would never want to relive that again. You'd never want to go back through that again. Does that experience still affect your approach to songwriting, your approach to being in a band? Like, how does that still resonate with you?
Well, it definitely affects my songwriting, and it affects my approach to being in a band in so much as that the mental illness aspect of it continues, right? So, and there's, you know, for me, there's got to be a commitment to a kind of treatment, if you will. And so there is a daily commitment for me to work on the aspects of that. And the mental illness part, if you talk to Patrick, and he makes light of this in the video, we all do, because it's like, well, Mantione's supposed to be insane. And that was very easy for me to tap into. And that type of stuff continues to this day. But, what I hope to do is not have it undermine our career the way it did in the past. And so, but there's a poignancy for me to that character, and it's all over the new record, right? So there's this guy who is somehow has this something on his back, and he's going to try it and swing the bat anyway. So now maybe we're older. But, you know, when I put on the guitar, for me, the minute I put it on, I'm launched back to being 25, and I'm light, and I can just lose myself in the moment and just have that connection with the guys. And when we played South by Southwest a couple of weeks ago, I remember just looking back at the band. It was a tough show. The sound was not good. I lost a capo down a crack that I couldn't get to. Patrick was not going to let go. We were going to have to play the song with the capo. Couldn't play the guitar. You know, it was all that stuff was happening. But instead of me just hurling the guitar into the crowd, I just hurled the music at the crowd. I hurled everything we had at them. It was awesome. And the band could feel it. We were all like, wow, how do we get through that? I have no idea. There have been other shows where we've gotten through it. It probably looked the same, you know, but maybe the damage wasn't as bad for the rest of the guys. I know it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
It's nice to have those guys still around. I think it speaks volumes about us that we're able to still play together with all that water under the bridge.
Live Aid's album Weirdo was reissued by Chicken Ranch Records in 2015. That label will also release their next album, Songs for St. Jude, this spring.